Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's quite amazing that I saw a report a little bit earlier that Ukraine is exporting electricity to the EU. I don't know. It's we're having updates on Ukraine. I wonder if they're having updates on us. They probably should be. Tembisa Fukuda, political analyst, senior research fellow at AfroAge. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Morning. Thanks for having me.
A great pleasure. It's what is happening in Ukraine? Because obviously this is dragging on. Somehow they seem to be surviving through all of it and even exporting electricity to the EU.
Well, we don't want to downplay what's happening in Ukraine because it still remains very bad. But the action is by and large on the eastern part of the country towards Russia, that Donbas region. And that's where the war has been raging. The rest of Ukraine, the western, north, and southern part of Ukraine, there's been stability there. It's business as usual. But at the same time, you don't want to emphasize on that and ignore the important part of why Ukraine is on the news at the moment, which is the aggression by Russia in the eastern part of Ukraine. So, media organization to a large extent, of course, have concentrated on telling that story, which is a very important story, because the risk is if you start reporting on Kyiv, for example, you might just begin to normalize and give an impression that all is well in Ukraine. It's still not well. The eastern part of Donbas region is badly damaged, infrastructure is destroyed, and Putin continues to act in his barbaric manner that has been since he started this war in February. So the situation remains the same.
So what is interesting to me is, does the fact that the war is now really confined to one area, is that a recognition on Russia's part that they're just not able to win? Or is this, or have they turned this into a war that'll just go on and on and on for years and slowly weaken Ukraine that way?
Well, you must remember, Russia is not calling this a war, it's calling it a special operation. And their special operation was to link the Donbas region, including Crimea, with Russia. So, one, it's working for them in terms of messaging to their population that we told you that we're not interested in Ukraine, we're only interested in Donbas region, as this was a special operation, not a war. But we know that, of course, Vladimir Putin failed into going, because initially he sent, if you remember, the 30-mile-long convoy towards Kyiv, which was stopped by the gallant Ukrainian forces. So he failed in terms of trying to go into the Ukrainian hinterland. And now this is a pretext and a way of getting out. And of course, after this, he's going to claim victory, not to say that we all know that it was not victory. His whole intention was to go into Ukraine and invade the entire Ukraine, and he failed to do so. So he's concentrating in that part of Ukraine so that he can use that to his own people to say, I told you it was a special operation and this is what we wanted to do, and we won.
And we've achieved it, yeah. What do we know about the reaction of Russians? Obviously, it's very limited in terms of information that we do know in terms of Russia itself. But do we have any sense of how the war is being perceived in Russia?
Well, I watched some reports of Russians, most of whom, of course, are not exposed to what actually is going on. But if you remember when the new Russian McDonald's was launched, and there were interviews of civilians on how they feel about Russia, there was a sense of national pride that Russia can actually do it, because most of them don't see what we see. But all they've seen a replacement, amongst others, of McDonald's, and they still believe that Russia can survive this onslaught, notwithstanding, of course, that inflation has reached unprecedented levels, and all the services that they used to enjoy before, particularly from the Western countries, have since disappeared. But most of them are now beginning to feel the pinch. But having said that, they don't see themselves as victims of Western aggression, not necessarily that their government was the first one who aggressed and violated the rights of the Ukrainians. So that's the situation. There's an information blackout, and as a result, the Russians are not really aware of what's happening in their name outside. But I think with sanctions slowly creeping in, people are going to begin to feel the pinch of those sanctions, and they'll start questioning the rationale behind the invasion in the first place.
Mm. There's also been talk about Putin's health. There's been talk about people within his inner circle maybe wanting to eliminate him. I always wonder when I read these articles if they aren't placed there for him to read, you know, and to send a message to him. So I'm never really sure about or confident about what I'm reading, because I feel like this is messaging and not necessarily news. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we don't know, do we? Mm. I mean, there was that ridiculous story of the poo story some couple of weeks ago of some of his close people following him to the toilet and making sure that they pick up the poo wherever he goes and take that with him to be analyzed back at home in Moscow. So that's what you know. But there are rumors, and there have been reports, not verified, that his health is deteriorating. But I'm not quite sure whether the world should really hope that Putin dies. Mm. There's a need for the world to act in terms of suppressing what Putin is doing, because if he does succeed in his intention, there's going to be chaos around the world. The precedents that this will set, as I've said before in this show, that we have a lot of these brutes around the world who've got similar ambitions, who would like to see, Ukraine could be that motivator. Countries like China, for example, will really declare.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because I thought we would by now have seen a move on Taiwan. And it's interesting that we haven't.
Yes. And we haven't because of the resolve of the Western countries in Ukraine. Because they do understand that if Putin was to succeed in Ukraine, you are likely to see Xi Jinping moving towards Taiwan, as he was saying. He said that he was going to move.
And for years, he said so. Absolutely.
So this has helped in a way to prevent those kind of moves.
Yeah, it's really, really just such a crazy situation. And of course, the impact around the world that we're seeing in terms of fuel pricing, in terms of inflation. Obviously, it's not all about this, but a lot of it is.
Yeah, so I wonder what the South Africans are saying at the moment. If you remember when the war started, there were a lot of South Africans were pro-Russia for whatever reasons, and South African government has been fence-sitting ever since. But now we see that the war in Ukraine is really impacting on all of us in terms of prices, food prices, etc.
Well,
we find ourselves in a similar, very.
Well, I was wondering when I was looking at pictures of Cyril Ramaphosa at the G7 with all of the other global leaders who are very, very vocal in their condemnation of Russia. I wonder if this was discussed at all in terms with him. And we know obviously Russia was discussed. It was a very, very important topic at the G7. But I wonder what stance Ramaphosa took, because he hasn't exactly been supportive of the rest of the world.
But there's a disconnect in South African foreign policy. You've got the presidency that seeks to go towards the West, and you've got the DERCO, which is still by and large, been pro-Russia. I mean, we saw how irritated the Minister of Department of International and Relations and Cooperation, Ali Dupando, was when she was asked about the war in Ukraine. She was almost defending Russia. And yet you see Cyril Ramaphosa, who have preferred, I don't know whether it was choice or design, that will have a teleconference with BRICS. And yet when it came to G7, he was there shaking hands and hugging. it's very clear who he prefers, but at the same time, DERCO prefers the other side, and I think that is the disconnect, which we hope that when the reshuffle comes post 2024, we'll see a much more different role player within DERCO that will ensure that the foreign policy is in sync with what the president wishes.
Absolutely. It is 7 o'clock. Thank you, as always, Tempisa Fukuda, who is a political analyst, a senior research fellow at AfraGe, and talking to us about the Russia-Ukraine war. It's 7 o'clock.